Charlie and a few of their friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better with your two beers in.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Beers In, a tipsy political roundtable. I'm Charlie Todd.
And I'm Cody Lindquist. Today's guest is Steve Lambert, an artist and activist and the co-founder of the Center for Artistic Activism.
We are already two beers in as we've just finished drinking a couple of beers and having an excellent chat with Steve about his work. That episode will come out next week. But now that we're good and tipsy and officially two beers in, we're going to chat about the political news of the week. Steve, I know you don't drink beer that often, so thank you.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
Two beers in.
We haven't checked in. You're on your second beer.
Is my face all flushed?
Our face is flushed too. I like being like, nope. I'm like, I don't know, man. This is just how it is.
Let's just start with the check-in question. Steve, how are you feeling in general? Are you hopeful? Have you lost hope?
I mean, you co-founded the Center for Artistic Activism, so I assume you're a Trump supporter. Which, by the way, we want to have a Trump supporter on. I if anyone knows anyone that lives in the New York area that knows a Trump supporter, I actually would love to talk to them.
I think you like the idea of that.
No, I would love
reality.
It. I'd love it.
Maybe not in our home, like we are now.
No, we'd meet you in a safe public space. we wouldn't invite you and introduce you to our child. But
I should intro Steve a little bit more. You'll find out more about him on our show next week. But Steve has done amazing projects like the New York Times Special Edition, where they printed 80,000 copies of the New York Times. That was a fake New York Times and distributed on the streets of New York. Also his amazing sculpture, Capitalism Works for Me. Tune in next week to find out more about that. But Steve is an activist and an artist who uses comedy in his work. So I guess one question that I did have for you, Steve, is like, how do you think the resistance is doing? The Women's March.
Oh, no.
I thought the Women's March was an inspiring, amazing day. We were here in New York. We marched with our 2.5-year-old. And I'm waiting for the next one. I don't know if there's consensus on what the next like big thing is. I want it to be
a day without women.
OK, yeah there's the women's strike. But that's not a march. But yeah. I know that's a big thing.
I'm getting a pedicure by like somebody a Chinese immigrant that can't take the day off. Just kidding, guys. Just kidding.
Somebody that's
all right. So yeah, but what do you? I mean,
how are they doing?
Yeah,
I think they're doing okay. As somebody that thinks about activism a lot, I have notes, but I know organizers of the Women's March and stuff, and one thing is it's like always easier when you have real concrete targets that you're trying to do. And there was some, as the Women's March was happening, it was like, okay, well, what's the target?
And besides Trump, you mean like what's the goal?
Like,
what are
objective,
our demands?
What's a thing that can be won that you can say?
Like
we
the Tea
did
Party
this?
Was like Obamacare death panels. We want to get rid of that. And that worked.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't work.
No, we didn't have death panels in Obamacare. Yeah, he was going to have them. And he was like, no,
thanks guys. But, the having like, you want this person out of office or you want the investigations into Russian interference.
Jeff Sessions must recuse himself. Michael Flynn must go. I mean, there's some things
that you
happen.
Can say this did or didn't happen. Yeah. Like that's always easier because people know when it's happened or when it hasn't happened. And it provides like a target that you can organize around and you can think of a lot of different ways to do that where it's like, let's show our resistance is more broad and vague. However, like, I think that was a really important thing to do. And it totally shifted the tone the day after inauguration and that's a worthy objective in on its own. And it did a great job at that.
It also seemed to fuel Trump's like personal rage at the numbers that were at his inauguration and all the hysteria over attendance. The fact that the Women's March had more people. Yeah.
It riled
him
up
and riling him up and getting him off his game is part of it.
Yeah. I agree. But going back to talking about having one singular rallying point, one thing that I did know from interacting with some people on Facebook that I went to high school with that are
A cross-section of America. Yeah,
go ahead. Sure. I made the mistake of responding to maybe it was a rhetorical question. Have I talked about this on our...
No. I remember the Facebook thread, but I don't think we've talked about it.
I thought, you know what? I am going to engage with Trump supporters in a very like non-aggressive and very like reach out sort of way. And a guy that I sort of knew from high school, was friends with-ish, posted like, I don't know why women are marching. Like, I have not a single woman I've ever talked to can say why anyone's marching.
Nobody knows why they're marching.
Yeah. So I responded and was like, oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for asking. And here's why I marched. And I really feel like if we all have this dialogue, we have so much more in common than we think. And we all want this good education for our children and blah, blah, blah.
And then, he being the reasonable person that he was, no. deferred to you and said, thank you for explaining.
Exactly, Steve. No, he didn't respond to me at all. And then a friend of his wrote like, bitches be stupid, and like posted a meme of like a woman with her tits in her mouth or something. I don't remember.
It was not. They didn't do bad, but no.
It was pretty bad. The rest of the chain got like devolved, like real bad. Like,
there's a little
bitch,
bit of back
get my
and
coffee, like that kind of thing. And they're joking. You know, I get it. Like, I have brothers. I get it. You think you're being funny. Like, I'm not a snowflake. I can like laugh. But anyway, it didn't work. Yeah. It didn't convert him. But my point is that like, I do think like, yes, there is a, people are like, why are you marching? He hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
And what's your issue?
No, he's done plenty.
Sure. And I can go through a laundry list, but it's easier now that I do sort of feel like there's this rallying cry around Russia now. Yeah. And it's true. I want a special prosecutor. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what we all want. We want a special prosecutor. We want an investigation. Get that done. That's objective. For me, that's objective number one now.
So everyone knows that like weeks ago, in this, among the small group of us that are in the Center for Artistic Activism, I was like, you guys, we need to get on this Russian election interference. This is when the story had kind of died and no one was talking about it. I'm like, that's the thing we need to get on.
Yeah.
We should get all the people that are like engaged in what we're doing on that. And then like within days it had picked up again, and Michael Flynn, the stuff with Michael Flynn happened. And I was like,
yeah.
Well, I had to be happy that it was back in the news, but I was like, there goes my plan.
Yeah, like, damn it. Well, yeah. I didn't get to do
it. My issue number one, which I think is related to Russia, but a little more specific, is tax returns. I think that,
I think that will happen in an investigation.
I think that's something that has a majority. I mean, even Republicans.
The Russian thing has a majority right now.
Yeah.
There was a USA Today.
Guys, USA Today is doing some great reporting.
Was it a pie chart?
It was. But it was about how much people care about Russia. And, you know, most people
60-40 or
something,
do
care.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but I think, I think tax returns is a winning issue, and he does not want to release them. And,
no, because he has like $2. So he literally has $2, and then he owes $50 million. Vladimir Putin.
He has $10 billion, but he owes Russia $11 billion or whatever. You know, there's something there.
But this is exciting to me because I also feel like there's traction, right? Like,
oh yeah,
I'm excited. The media has not given up, and we will get into the distractions that they're throwing at them. The little like the dog food, that the dog treats that they're giving the media, and they're still just saying Russia, 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 Russia. You know, so I'm excited that this feels like the first thing. It's like, okay, this is a step. Let's all get behind this. Let's do this. And then we'll figure out what to do from there.
One thing that I think one of Bill Maher's panelists brought it up on Real Time this weekend, but it was kind of the first time I'd heard this articulated, and I forget who said it. I'm sorry. But that the everyone who's been caught meeting with the Russian ambassador, there's such an easy way to get out of it is to say, like, you're goddamn right. I met with him and I said, you better stop messing with our democracy. Right. I mean, what if Michael Flynn or Jeff Sessions is like, yeah, I did call him. I called him and said, like, we keep hearing reports that you guys were hacking our political parties.
And Trump is going to win fair and square.
Cool,
and he doesn't want that.
because whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, it's horrifying that a foreign government is hacking the, even if they're hacking the opposition, like, why don't they just take the moral high ground and say, like, I was talking with all these people. I guess they can't because the conversations were recorded
and Jeff Sessions wasn't.
You can't just lie about it. Maybe Jeff's wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah. So I kind of want to talk about the wiretap tweets. Ugh. Yeah, guys, two beers so in, wiretap tweets.
Are you just pronouncing that with two P's or one? I can't tell.
The what?
Trump.
The wiretap tweets? No, the wiretap.
Trump spelled tap with two T's. Okay.
You're a college professor. What do you think about the biggest scandal here is that he can't spell, right? He misspelled tap, wiretap.
Yeah, I would get out my red pen.
So Donald Trump claimed with no evidence that President Obama tapped his phones. We found out that this was based on a
conservative radio host conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
That was then reported by Breitbart and then printed out onto paper and given to Trump. Because Trump doesn't really he uses Twitter. He has an Android phone. He can use Twitter. Yeah. He does not use email.
Guys, he's 70.
Doesn't use email. But he has a media diet, which is there are people in the White House who print out for him relevant blog posts, relevant articles on the internet. I mean, I think he might read the New York Times.
Do you think he'll stand in front of a microwave while it's on?
I have to admit, I kind of take a couple of steps away from my microwave when it's on, too.
I didn't really use it that much when I was pregnant. That was like the first time that I was sort of like, I don't know. I guess I could just boil water on the stove.
But I mean, we have a president who has the internet printed out for him and curated by someone else.
Which, if I had the money, I would do that.
No, you would not do that. You want a paper?
I'd be like, print my emails.
You're under 50.
I'm going to write notes and you write them back.
But someone printed out a Breitbart story. But that was sort of part of why this was such an insane incident is that Trump, one of Trump's, I think he had four tweets about it, but one of Trump's tweets is, I have learned that Obama had wiretapped the White House. And I think most people were thinking, like, he's learned. Well, he had a national security briefing, the presidential daily briefing, someone from the intelligence community has let him know this. Like, but Trump learned something, meaning I read a piece of paper printed out from Breitbart.com is what he meant by I have learned.
I also just love Kellyanne Conway went on Fox News and was like, you know, when they asked her, where is this coming from? You know, she's like, he's the president of the United States and he has knowledge that we don't know. And then in the same breath was like, we should have an investigation. Well, okay, if he knows it, then just like tell us, because it's the executive branch that would have, you know, released called for it. This. So you know, you either know it or you don't. Like,
you're
you need
starting
an investigation.
To take it seriously.
Yeah, that's a
no,
problem.
I'm not at all.
I will say, Cody and I, as listeners to this podcast know, are loyal viewers of NBC Nightly News, despite the fact
we are
under 40.
Is Brian Williams back on?
No, it's Lester.
He has the 11th hour. He hosts the 11th hour.
Lester Holt?
Yeah, Lester Holt.
Isn't he a chump?
No, Lester's all right.
He's okay.
Yeah, he plays bass guitar. He's great.
Yeah, he's like a jazz musician. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay. So, but Hallie Jackson, who's a great correspondent for NBC News and MSNBC, she did the lead story tonight about this. And it was the first time where it was like, the media is like, this story is handling it right. Because usually it's just like, Trump said this crazy thing. Some people say it's not true.
Right.
But the story tonight, it just felt like a turning point for me. It's the first time I've listened to NBC Nightly News cover a Trump lie where I was like, yes, that's what I've been saying. Because what the story said was like, Trump said this thing without evidence. This is similar to when he said Obama didn't have a birth certificate, when he said that 3 million people, voted illegally. I can't remember. Do you remember any other lies? But basically the report rattled off 4 to 5 past boldface lies. And when you hear them all in a string, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. This guy's a liar. Right. Because you're like, oh, yeah. What's the update on the investigators that went to Hawaii that found amazing things about Obama's birth certificate? Oh, there is no update. Oh, what's the latest thing about the investigation into the 3 million, illegal votes? Like, there is no investigation. It didn't happen. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is so refreshing because we're finally learning to say, hey, it's not that he said one thing and there's even saying like he said this thing without evidence. He said this thing and we can't, some people say it's not true. It's like, no, this is a pattern of this man saying making shit up.
Do you think that, Steve, you've spent some time talking, you've traveled a lot and shown a lot of work in different parts of the country Do you think that that Trump supporters think this is a witch hunt at the same scale that that like we think Russia is? If that makes sense, we are like go after Russia. So and do they think that he's now uncovering a conspiracy that's the same as they think we think Russia?
I'm sure
the same.
There are some that do, but yeah. They're like such a small percentage.
Right.
And the thing that's really hard, we have a saying that comes from Steve Duncombe's family, who's the other.
And Steve is the co-founder
of the Center for Artistic Activism, mm-hmm. which is don't organize around the assholes. Right. Mm. So like when I was working in Birmingham, it's really hard not to imagine like the most hardcore racist as the person that you need to like sort of convince or speak to.
Right.
But they're not, right? Like those people are going to die. And there will be a younger generation that comes out and that will sort of go away.
So you're saying I shouldn't reach out on Facebook to a guy that just posts pictures of like tits.
No.
That says, like, what's up with these bitches?
No, yeah. You should reach out to his sister who didn't vote.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
But
cool,
that thinking of a hardcore Trump supporter as someone that you actually need to think about is like that. Yeah, don't organize around those people, right?
Right.
Like it doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter what happens for them to sort of switch sides or if they ever do, right? It's the other like 90% of people
right.
that can be reasonable, mm-hmm. right? The unreasonable people are lost.
Right. True.
And are it's kind of a waste of time, right? Mm-hmm. And like, will take all your energy too.
Yeah.
And they're the trolls on the internet. They're like, you know, like I do look, it's kind of amazing because when this stuff comes up, I will look at Fox News to see how Fox News is reporting mm-hmm. it, which is astounding sometimes.
So my mom's like that too.
Like
she's like, I got to know what the enemy's thinking.
Yeah. The day of the Women's March, when it, like the pictures are starting to come out, I was like, oh my God, this is huge. This is gigantic, yeah. right? Like yeah. this is around the world. And then like, what are they saying on Fox News? Nothing.
Yeah, crickets.
Literally yeah. nothing until like very late in the day, you know? And then they start
like they had live coverage of something. They just weren't talking about the Women's March.
Yeah, they were talking about all kinds of, there was nothing on the front page of Fox News about the Women's March, right?
Well, to be fair, it took NBC a long time to do it too on MSNBC.
I'm sure. Really?
Yeah.
But what was I saying? Two beers.
Just that the investigating the opposition.
If you look at like yesterday when Trump made these tweets, I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, so I'm going to look at what's trending on Twitter mm-hmm. about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you see this insane stuff, right? And if you think mm-hmm. of like super supporters of Trump that are like one of the things I remember is they keep looking for not intelligence, evidence.
Yeah.
See, I do not drink a lot.
Hey,
sorry.
Evidence, this is why we write our questions and our intro down because.
Yeah. So they keep looking for evidence of Russian interference and they can't find it. Right. And it's like, it's been a month.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, and there's no independent investigation.
Yeah. But
I love how they're like, we haven't found enough evidence. It's like, well, that's why we need an investigation.
But there has been.
There's like enough drip, drip, drip that, you know.
So anyway, these hardcore people are like nothing. There's not going to be any reasonable information right. that gets them to be like, oh, wait, maybe I'm wrong.
Well,
that's not how people work.
But I wonder that because so I know a lot of people that would listen to this podcast or we would know from our past or whatever that are Trump supporters would think that we're that.
You're extreme.
Extreme.
This is a very liberal thing that you're doing right now, which is like, oh, they're like that. Maybe I'm like that.
No, but I
empathy.
I don't. Yeah, I'm sorry. I have empathy. Ugh, I'm such a fucking monster. I want to give you health insurance and make sure you don't die.
No, but it's the self-doubt of
it's
maybe
not self-doubt.
I'm as bad as
I
this.
Don't think that I am.
It's a self-reflection
really
that
don't.
The other side doesn't appear to
I
have.
Do. Exactly. I do honestly believe. And again, we've talked about this. I love Obama. I don't agree with everything he did.
Yeah.
And there are things that I will say, I don't stand by that. And I do understand the other side. Like I don't, the drone program, you know, there are things that I fundamentally disagree with, but I would never say everything he said was perfect or everything he did was perfect or justify everything he did. So I don't know. But Trump supporters
seem to do that, right? It's like, whatever he says, it seems, yes.
He could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot someone. I mean, he told us a long time ago.
Yeah.
The amazing thing to me is just like the fact that Trump on a Saturday morning at 6:30 a.m. when presumably everyone who...
We were sleeping and we have a 2.5-year-old child and I was sound asleep.
Everyone who works for him, all of his friends and family, everyone's asleep. No one's awake at 6:30 a.m. on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of hope the president is.
Europe is awake, but, you know, I mean, no one East Coast, Central, or Mountain or Pacific is awake. And Ivanka and Jared, it's their Sabbath. You know, they're not even taking an elevator today. Like, they're asleep. just the fact that he can just make, like, tweet something that is patently false, and then everybody wakes up in a panic, and we have to spend 48 hours of people trying to figure out how the emperor is, in fact, wearing clothes. Right. Yeah. I mean, just like just to watch everybody and like Jason Chaffetz, like, oh, well, we should investigate this. Like, well, no, you should not investigate it. The president read a Breitbart article that was printed out for him and made a tweet. We don't need to investigate.
Jason Chaffetz was kind of the only one. Everyone else was like, sorry, I can't give an interview today. I'm like super busy.
But the other thing is, this is coming off of Jeff Sessions, right? Like Thursday and Friday were not good.
So do you think this is a distraction by Trump?
I think he's hoping it will be. I don't think he's like so.
It's a bad distraction. Like, like he's getting a bunch of bad press because Jeff Sessions is.
But he's saying like this should be part of the Russian investigation too, which is trying to muddle it.
Well, he's a counterpuncher, and he'll tell you that he's a big counterpuncher. But it doesn't always work because, like, you know, Trump likes to do like. If you say something about Trump, his most common response is "I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you." Right, that's his thing. Like,
and
yeah, there's a tape of me saying that I like to grab women by the pussy without permission. Well, yeah. Well, Hillary's husband is worse, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, there's a problem with with.
Congratulations, you've used the rhetoric of a 5-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's...
That's what I'm saying. I'm the mother of a toddler. I fucking know how to deal with this shit.
But the problem is, like, so he goes on the attack. Like, if he has a bad day, he goes on the attack and just, you know, puts a wild accusation about the other side, in this case, Obama. But, like, you're president now. You can't just do that. You can't just say the former president wiretapped me.
But he did.
No, he did. But it's not going to work out. It's because you have the head of the FBI, his FBI, our friend James Comey, who felt important to tell the country a week before the election that Huma Abedin also had a laptop in addition to a desktop. Yeah. You know, James Comey's coming out and saying, like, yeah, I would really appreciate if the Justice Department would back me up and say that this is all bullshit. I mean, this doesn't work anymore. Like, when you're president, you can't say I've sent investigators to Hawaii and they found amazing things. You can't say the NFL sent me a letter. Like, you can't just lie.
He's not thinking about the whole country. He's thinking about his supporters. Mm-hmm. He's thinking very narrowly, right?
Right.
And the other thing is that it is distracting from the...
It's our window.
Our window just opened.
Okay.
If anybody heard that noise in the podcast.
It's not your child climbing out of the window.
It sounded like a cry, but we have a creaky window.
Wait,
there it goes.
Everyone be quiet.
It might even be audible in the podcast. We should move on.
But it is very creepy and like a old lady howling.
We have a haunted window. Okay.
But the other thing is that it is clearly a distraction from the Russia stuff. He's like freaking out and he's like, wait, what about this? Right. And in a way it's working. And Victoria, my partner, has this. Like, she's like, we should make a thing that's like, never forget Russian election interference.
No, we're all in memento and we need to like tattoo Putin stole our election and Trump is a liar and Trump's tax returns are not haven't been released on our chest.
But I do
backwards
think,
and look in the mirror every morning.
Do you think that the media has gotten better? Because I feel like, you know, we're what, 2 months in to the election now? And I feel like they're adapting quickly.
Yeah.
The election was annoying. The media just sort of was like treating him like a normal person. And now they're like,
what changed? Maybe it was that Trump said they were the opposition and he insulted them for 2 hours.
They're covering it differently. That being said, does anyone trust the media anymore?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think people choose their media, right? And then whatever they choose, they trust.
Right.
And that's the problem when I think Fox News is a huge problem, and framing like CNN as being like the fact that CNN is
CNN, the airport news
or something, you know, it's like CNN for decades has been like annoying.
And yeah, I've been bitching about CNN for years.
Yeah, now it's like how different is it than USA Today, right? Like who takes USA Today?
USA
seriously
Today now has become
new. Yeah, and like, somehow we've shifted all that stuff to the left, you know. Right. But
reality or the administration is so far to the right and so insane that these sort of like center right boring news agencies like CNN and USA Today are now like, you know, the new like
seem more like legitimate, radical, like, you know, these amazing truth tellers, heroes, you know, and that, like,
to be fair, Jake Tapper's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think, you know, in this context, right?
Yeah.
Now the Trump administration, in the midst of all of this chaos and noise, has delayed, changed, or revoked 90 regulations in the past 2 months.
Yeah.
These have included protecting giant corporations and banks, allowing mentally ill people to buy guns, letting coal companies pollute rivers. Do Republicans think that any regulations are good? I mean, do you think there's any regulation at all they would fight for, or?
I don't know. I mean, this is what's sort of annoying.
Regulations on sexuality, maybe. Regulations on gender.
Yeah.
Besides anal regulations.
Okay.
Where you put, what orifice you put your penis in.
This relates to the conversation we were having earlier, where I think there's a libertarian sort of extreme right wing of the Republican Party that is more, they're ideologues, right? Like they're committed to a sort of philosophy more than reality. And it's emphasized by the Cato Institute. It's emphasized and reinforced by the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers in the last week are like, yesterday there was a story about how they're trying to reanimate their network to fight to repeal Obamacare, right? So in their mind, like all state-run medicine or whatever is this travesty. It's socialism, it's evil, whatever. And it's based on an ideology instead of the reality. The Republican senators and congresspeople themselves have to face down the actual people that are telling them that, you know, like, I survived cancer because of this, or like I can't get, no healthcare will cover me because, you know, if you have truly free markets like the Koch brothers and the Cato Institute advocate for, these people are screwed. You know, like if you have an pre-existing condition, that doesn't work in their economic model, right? So you've got that sort of ideology that, and Paul Ryan, I think, is kind of terrible about this. Like a lot of these Republicans are, where
it's, he has like, this like this fucking future in his brain, this Ayn Rand future.
And there's a way that I appreciate that idealism because I share it about socialism and anarchism, you know, like, yeah, wouldn't it be great if the world worked like this? But at the same time, I can recalibrate back to the reality that we're in.
Yeah, because at the same breath, they're having this conversation. They're also they want to increase defense spending by $50 billion. So
for what?
Right. You know? So it's like, okay, well, I get it. If you are fully cut spending, cut regulations, cut this, cut that, cut that, okay, we could maybe try that and there's maybe a world where it would work, but you're not doing that. You're doing that for like certain things, but then also for defense spending, you're increasing.
I don't think there
it
is a world where that would work.
Yes, but I'm saying, like, in theory, I could understand if they were ideological about everything, a Rand Paul point of view or that sort of thing, where it's like, okay, no, we are going to cut everything. Because I do agree with Rand Paul in a lot of ways, you know, of just, he really is an ideologue.
I mean, we brought up Obamacare. I just think healthcare is such the exception to that like extreme.
Healthcare and education should be.
Yeah. There's just like healthcare is, anybody can get cancer at any time. And it's random and it's terrible and it can be financially devastating and it can bankrupt you.
Yeah.
So we all need to be a part of the same pool and the same program, and it should be a single payer situation, just like it's totally random and awful if your house catches on fire. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to have fire department insurance. Just the city will come and all of our taxes go towards a fire department that will come and put a hose towards your building to try to save your possessions and save your life. And the same thing, if you have the emergency of cancer or something like that, like we should all. It's just so obvious to me, and I don't understand. I like why?
But like, what I can't is, imagine Paul Ryan like arguing against the fire department, right? Like all those guys are. I hate speaking in generalizations, but you know, there's like this regard for the first responders, the police and the fire department, you know, like private. And then, yeah, there are some, I think, that would argue for private police forces. And there's someone at the, some moron at the Cato Institute that's working over a paper about how that's better.
That's why we have private prisons.
Yeah. But like, you know, I think this is the part of like, I mean, this is why I teach at a state university, right? Like, this is part of what you get out of a liberal education is like realizing your own biases, realizing the sort of flaws in your own thinking and trying to see things from a,
the it's like the complexity. Liberal that's like, maybe I'm on the other side of the spectrum.
But
right?
I don't think it's I mean, part of it is liberal, but part of it is being educated. Right. And understanding that there that this is complex, that the healthcare system is fucking complicated. You know,
who like, knew?
Yeah, that everyone should know that if you are educated, right. You know, and that there that it's this ideology clashing and with reality. Right.
Well, and they've kept their secret Obamacare replacement plan under lock and key in a basement.
Well, it came out tonight,
but it came out today. And so what they're doing is they're keeping all the favorite parts, right? They're keeping pre-existing condition. You must be able to get insurance if you have pre-existing condition. They're keeping the insuring kids up to 26. But
they're introducing all this free market bullshit.
Right. So they're getting rid of the mandate because that's been their biggest beef, right? Like you shouldn't have to buy insurance. You should buy it if you need it. Well, you're all going to fucking need it eventually. So just buy it. And now they're doing these super, these tax credits. Now tax credits are problematic in a lot of ways. A, we don't know how much any of this is going to cost because they're not actually waiting until the Congressional Budget Office.
Yeah. CBO didn't score.
Comes up with a price plan for it. But B, like this whole idea of tax credits is really frustrating. If you're poor and you need and you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're not living for the end of the year. Right. So like this tax credit bullshit of like, but you'll get it back at the end of the year. You just have to put it forth. Like you have to if you pay $500 in health insurance now, you might get $300 back at the end of the year. It's like, well, if I am barely feeding my children and I'm putting like lunch money into a like tiny little plastic bag and give it to my kid. Like I can't put forth the $400.
No, you don't understand. That's all so complicated. You're a rational economic actor, right? Like you are, you total up numbers and you make decisions based on economics.
Totally.
This is how humans work in the minds of economists.
Exactly.
Right. But like to understand that people that have children that are like living paycheck to paycheck, don't think this way. It's like, well, they should, and we need to teach them. That's the I.
But
the
we're not going to teach them because we're actually not going to give them an education either. So.
Yeah, but the when the punishment and the stakes are high enough, then people will realize and they'll learn to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and take care of themselves. And you know, like again, it's a great imaginary way that the world.
Well, they're also doing this bullshit thing of too of like these tax credits are based on age and not income, which is another thing too, where it's like, why do you hate people that don't make a lot of money? Right. Like you're saying like, fuck you.
Do you know the answer?
You didn't make a lot of money. You're a fucking dick. I'm, you know, we should treat everyone the same. You don't get more tax credit because you made, you worked at McDonald's. Go fuck you,
your
dumbass.
Income is connected to morality. Right. This is what I've learned from talking to tons of people about economics, right? Is that
I'm poor because I am a bad person?
So we should preface this that we'll talk about this more in our next episode, but Steve toured the country, I think the world, with a big sign that said, capitalism works for me, true or false, and had a scoreboard on the true side and the false side, and he let everyday people who encountered this in a public square or a college campus vote. So, so you've talked to a lot of people about these kinds
of things. And there's this attitude that comes up, and I've seen it many times, which is like, well, capitalism does work if you work hard, right? If you work hard, it will work. And then I'll say, well, you know, there's a lot of people seem to be working pretty hard.
Yeah.
That were just here, you know, and I can tell stories of people that just came I just talked to about how hard they worked, mm-hmm. and they don't seem to be getting ahead. And they're like, oh, well, the problem is they got to work smart, right? Right? Like, you don't just work hard at some service job. You got to, like, think about be an entrepreneur and make your way up, right? So what they don't understand that they're saying, and I don't think they consciously realize, is that the inverse of that, which is the reason you're poor is because you're lazy and you're dumb.
And by the way, I think dumb people should have health care, even if it's true. Even if they are dumb, even if they're lazy, I don't think they should die.
Yeah,
because they can't afford health care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing is too, is like we praise small business owners, right? Like, oh yeah. My God, this country was built off the back of fucking small business owners, right? I love small business owners, but not everybody could be a small business owner. People have to work for the business, right? Like somebody has to be the cashier, and they have to be good at their job. And somebody has, like, if you have a good cashier at your business, your small business, that will elevate your business. So that person isn't any less skilled than the person running it. They might be making less money, but they still should be taken care of. They still, you know, there's value in that and there's merit in that. And so I think we also have this attitude now where we treat people with these low jobs, these low wage jobs, as idiots and dumbasses. And then we end up with people who have no customer service skills, who don't like their job, who are barely even making as much as they would on welfare. So why even work? You know what I mean? Like, from an Ayn Rand perspective, if we elevate these jobs and these people working them, then wouldn't everybody be beneficial? But no, they're not starting their own business, so they're pieces of shit. I guess
I grew up, my parents started a small business. Like, they were in the church. My mm-hmm. dad was a monk. My mom was a nun.
Wow.
And they quit at 35. This is a whole other story, right?
And then you have, how many, well, your mom has 12 siblings. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I have a brother and sister, but I was the oldest. But anyway, they started this furniture business, right? Mm-hmm. Between 1976 and 1998, which is the worst time to start a furniture business because that's when all the automation happened and globalization and stuff, right? People don't have custom furniture made anymore. But it's not like, it was super hard and a struggle, right? And like, healthcare costs are incredibly expensive and make running that business harder, you mm-hmm. know?
They have to pay their employees.
Yeah, and ours, right? And it's like it's a substantial cost. But also, in a way, it's easier just to go to a job and get a paycheck, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they ended up doing in the end. Like, the business sort of flopped. They sold it, and then they ended up getting regular jobs. My mom is over 70 now and still works. She works for a state university at a research center and, like, administers grants because there's a better retirement program. Like, at the end of... you know, two decades of doing the small business, they had no retirement,
nothing.
Yeah, I mean, my dad runs a small business, too. He runs a sporting goods store in South Carolina, you know, and he was excited when Obamacare came about because he had less than 50 employees at the time and wanted his employees to be able to get health care elsewhere and not have to pay for it because it's incredibly expensive. And I think the fundamental flaw with healthcare in the United States of America is that it's tied to employment. It should have never been tied to employment. I think somebody pitched Nixon on that and it happened. But, you know, Steve, you're someone who's had many jobs over your career. I'm someone who's my own boss / freelancer. And thank God my wife is in the Screen Actors Guild and I get my insurance through her, through a good solid union. But, I think the thing that, you know, you're talking about the average Republican that says, well, the reason these people aren't pulling themselves up by their bootstraps is they're not smart. They're not entrepreneurial. It's really hard to be entrepreneurial because entrepreneurial means you're going to leave your crappy job and go out and strike out on your own. Mm-hmm. And if your insurance is tied to your crappy job, it's really hard to go out and
be a freelancer.
And
you don't have parents some safety net. I mean...
But I just don't understand why everybody who wants everyone to start their own small business and be their own boss and be entrepreneurial and be a smart worker and a hard worker at the same time doesn't get that if healthcare was a right that was given to us by our government, then we wouldn't be tied to crappy jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
We have so much more mobility.
But I think that going back to that, like, you're not succeeding because you are not working hard, you're not working smart or lazy and dumb. it's like a thing that it's part of it is people telling themselves that, right? Like, I'm succeeding not because of chance.
Right. Or luck.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Not because of
or
luck.
Or privilege.
Right? Yeah, or privilege or all these things. The world is in a scary place where at any moment I could lose my job or lose my healthcare or die or get sick or get cancer. It's that I'm smart and I'm a hard worker and I'm going to be okay. And they're telling themselves that, right?
Or even just justifying their own wealth and in some cases extreme wealth by the fact that, like, I deserve this because I'm smart and I worked really hard.
Yeah.
Not because I got lucky, because I
had
a leg
up. Which is also just frustrating
up.
Because... admitting that you have this privilege, right, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to admit that you're not also talented, right? Like, you know, I'm a white person and I have privilege, right? And I can say I grew up poor and I did. And I can say I am one of the first people in my family to go to college. And that's true. And I can say that that's the reason I succeeded. But I can also say, well, but I also had parents that weren't, you know, drug addicts, and I had parents that wanted me to do well and that, you know, read to me and pushed me to do whatever I could do, even if they couldn't afford it. And I'm white and I'm smart and I went to a good college and there are all these things, but I also know that there was privilege involved in that.
Yeah.
It's not same. Yeah. I didn't grow up in a, you know, inner city Baltimore, and I'm not a black little boy that was, you know, whizzing bullets every day, you know? Yeah. So I can understand the difference between those things.
Sure. This conversation is reminding me of a quote from Ben Carson today. I just, whenever Ben Carson says something insane, I like to bring it up on this podcast.
Wise sage Ben Carson.
The wise sage Ben Carson, who somehow separated Siamese twins' brains all those years ago with his gifted hands, but seems to be the dumbest person I've ever heard speak. But I just wanted to, this is a tangent, but Ben Carson today, I don't know where he was speaking, but I'm just going to read his quote. That's what America is about, a land of dreams and opportunity. There were other immigrants who came here on the bottom of slave ships who worked even longer, even harder for less. But they had a dream that one day their sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, great-grandsons, and great-granddaughters might pursue prosperity and happiness in this land.
No.
So to unpack this, Ben Carson today referred to Africans who were brought here in slave ships as immigrants. One, that's problematic. But that these immigrants who came here in the bottom of slave ships, they worked even longer and even harder for less.
Yeah.
I like the for less. Like, well, maybe for no money at all because they were fucking slaves.
Is he basically just like, we should all be happy working for less and working hard?
But these immigrants who came over, in slave ships and worked for less, they also had a dream that one day, first of all, had a dream.
That's the part that got me.
It's really pissing me off.
Like, they're in a slave ship laying there going, but I'm going to America.
And my great granddaughter is going to have prosperity.
Yeah, I'm okay with the blurring, like rhetorically blurring slaves and
immigrants,
like to sort of
maybe
make
like,
that transition.
Maybe sort of like an accident.
They
like we're all immigrants, maybe.
Yeah, in the
and there
right
were, like,
context.
Indentured servants that came.
But
the
part where I was like, no, like, you know, it's like you want to give somebody credit. It's like, okay, well, maybe this is out of context, but it's like
you have to give them the benefit.
They
of
had
like,
dreams. I think they were going like, what the fuck is going on?
I literally don't speak your language. I was ripped from my parents and put on a ship.
Where am I?
I actually, that also implies that they were excited in some way to come to America, as if their life was so terrible in Africa, where they were living with their family and like, being happy and independent. And
Statue of Liberty existed at that time,
exactly.
And they'd be like, wait a sec.
Yeah,
this whole being ripped from my family was one thing, but... Well, at least we're going to America.
Well, like last week or 2 weeks ago, Betsy DeVos was saying that historically black colleges, were created as original school choice. Like they were because they didn't have opportunity at the other colleges. Like because they weren't fucking allowed to go there, you monster.
But they're just trying to stretch what they believe into something that makes sense more broadly.
Because what
right?
they believe is so reprehensible, also, and you can't just say that.
Just
but
whitewash.
It's
just
right?
whitewash. Like, you know, we're far enough away from slavery that we can just pretend that these people came here because they wanted dreams of a better life. Like, no. America wasn't a fucking better life if you're a slave. Yeah. Your life was great before, and now you're like fucking in a middle. I mean, you're a slave. Like, what the hell is wrong with you?
It's so ridiculous that because Donald Trump knew like two black people, that's why Ben Carson is a cabinet member. Like, he was like, well, I guess I got to have one black person. Ben.
And he's in charge of the only cabinet that has the word urban in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just bullshit. Okay, so I want to talk about what happens in Mar-a-Lago on the weekends. So 4 of the last 5 weekends, he's gone to his resort to mingle with the guests who have paid over $200,000 to be there.
More than that. I mean, that's initiation fee.
And then you pay all these fees. So people spend millions of dollars on lobbyists. Should they just get members to the club? I mean, instead, like, why are we spending any money on lobbyists? Should they all just...
There's actually, it's been revealed this week, there's a cheaper way to get close to the Trump administration. You could pay the $200,000 Mar-a-Lago initiation fee and the dues, or you could just spend $300 in Airbnb a room in Trump Tower. I don't know if you heard this, but today it was revealed that there was someone who, I mean, because Trump Tower is an apartment building. Trump happens to own the top couple of floors and some of the commercial floors as well for his company. But there's just random people who own property in Trump Tower and who own their own apartments. And someone was Airbnb-ing their apartment at the pretty affordable rate of $300 a night when you consider that sometimes my parents have to pay $400 a night in a hotel room just to be in my neighborhood, you know, here near Times Square. But I mean, could you imagine if
I brought this up to Charlie, I was like, you know, I feel really sad for all those people that live in that building. You know, it's like all of a sudden they have all these restrictions because the president lives there. And then Charlie was like, I think if someone's Airbnb-ing a Trump apartment that they own, they're doing fine. Fuck I was that. Like, oh, yeah, Fuck you're right. I was like, they have like a $5 million apartment, so they're okay. I don't really feel bad for them. But I like how I was concerned about the little man that owned an apartment in Trump Tower.
It's just so glaring. I mean, that's just a funny story that somebody was Airbnb-ing their like apartment where the first lady and her son lives in the same building. Like, that's crazy.
I heard that
we have Barron a first lady?
Was, yeah.
Yeah, Ivanka, you know.
Oh, it's Ivanka. Yeah.
No, I actually, one thing I will say, this. What's her name?
Melania.
I'm sorry. I was going to say Mariana.
We've all had too much to drink and we couldn't remember the first lady's name. But she hasn't been in the news lately.
No. But you know what? I want to stand up for her because I was really pissed last week. They were showing her awkwardly in stiletto heels with like this like silk outfit on, like reading a book to children, and she was like holding it to herself and not like showing the kids the pictures. And anyone who's like a mom is like, you're a monster. Why are you doing that? But honestly,
is she the mother of Barron, by the way?
Yes, she is Barron's mom.
Okay, just check.
Who knows,
right?
Who knows? But they might have all been just like made in a petri dish in Mar-a-Lago and served with dessert. But I think it's bullshit that she should have to know how to read a book to a kid. Like, she's the first lady. Who gives a shit if she's like, why does she have to fit this mold of mom in chief? I think it's bullshit. Like,
you think it's like an unfair standard?
Yes, it is an unfair standard. There's no reason that she should have, like, he goes to work every day and she has to go read fucking books to school kids. Like, no, I'm sorry. She's fashion, you know, she likes fashion. Like, she should be able to do whatever she's interested in.
She's also basically been held captive for many years on whatever mail order agreement.
That's also bullshit, I will say. I will say that I might personally think
she's a robot.
I might personally think that I can't imagine how anybody would have sex with him unless they were being held captive. But you know what? She's a woman who's made the choice and maybe she likes that orange face. I don't know. She's with him. And I'm excited that anytime anybody talks about like someone not being a traditional first lady, it makes me happy. Because this whole first lady bullshit needs to go out the window.
Or like a good mother. If it was like Sean Spicer reading to children and holding the book to himself, would you also be like, that's bullshit? You shouldn't have read a book to children.
Sean Spicer isn't expected to do that. Like every single other job in the White House is working on not about reading things. Books to children. And this is the one job that's like, she married a politician, so she has to be perfect and cook and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, bullshit. Maybe she just wants to stay in Trump Tower and be like, fuck you.
I agree.
No, she should live in the White House. But
it is weird. Well, I mean, she can live where she wants.
No, she shouldn't because it's too expensive.
Oh, yeah. It's costing our city a lot.
Or go to Chappaqua.
It is weird. It is weird that that Trump is just wandering around in a bathrobe by himself with no spouse and no one to talk to.
Except when you realize he's a 70-year-old man with a wife who is how old?
Like, not that much older than me. She's, like, in her 40s.
Yeah.
She's really maybe in like her
10,
40s?
Yeah, she's, like, 10 years older than me.
Then it's not as surprising.
Oh, my goodness. So another thing that happened, I think, today or yesterday is North Korea fired 4 ballistic missiles into the sea near Japan.
Just saying hello.
Question that I had is, do you think that we as a nation are better equipped to understand and deal with an unstable autocrat with no grasp on reality now that we have our own? Right? Because, like, this is the thing I've been thinking about. Like, you know, take me back before the election. My opinion on North Korea was like, yeah, that country's fucking insane. Like, they have
they have
this crazy narcissist who's president who is not connected to reality, who is a dictator and has all these people who blindly support whatever he does. And now we kind of have that.
Like,
what do you think, Steve?
It's fucking scary.
I have a hard time taking seriously any news about North Korea. Right? It's like they fire ballistic missiles. Oh, that's interesting.
They
like,
do it a lot, right? They're always firing something.
Yeah, but like they don't seem super organized, capable. I mean, maybe that's also, I understand the danger.
I mean, I don't think his brother was saying that when he was killed by a woman wearing an LOL shirt last
that was weird.
Who thought she was on a prank show?
Yeah.
I'm using that. Anytime I accidentally murder someone, I'm totally using that excuse.
Yeah, like, where's the cameras? That's all you have to do. You kill the person, they're like, look for cameras.
Or just,
like, wait,
if
no.
there's no camera, just take a selfie and be like, what? And
I post it on Instagram. Told to rob this bank and part of a prank show.
You know, that was an old what are those two guys? Coyle and Sharp.
Oh yeah.
Gag, right? It was like they went up to a random guy on
the street.
These are
some legendary pranksters from the Bay Area in the 60s, and they was really audio pranks. They recorded all their pranks.
They had like a briefcase tape recorder, and they went up to this guy and they're like, okay, we're making a movie. It's in the bank. It's like a sort of like, you know, non-actors.
No.
You're going to go in. Do you have a gun? Can you get your gun? Can you go in and, like, you're going to rob the bank and the cameras are going to be hidden. And the guy's like, yeah, sounds good. You know,
and he did.
And then they're like, eventually they say, by the way, there's no cameras. And the guy's like, oh, this is good. But anyway, so then that became real this last week, right? The Coyle and Sharp gag.
Oh, damn.
But anyway, yeah, I should probably look into this more because I just think of North Korea as a bunch of clowns.
I just feel like all we need to do, having this experience with Trump, is just have Trump to tweet out to North Korea, like, we respect you and you're great. Well, and then he'll just, like, shut up for 6 months.
The
right?
thing that's really scary is that if Trump can wake up at 6:30 in the morning and say Obama wiretapped Trump Tower when there's no evidence and he heard about it on a Breitbart blog. You know, what if Breitbart puts up a blog this Friday that says Kim Jong-un says Trump has a 2-inch penis? Then Trump's going to wake up at 6:30 the next morning and we're going to be in World War III. Right?
Well, they don't have nuclear capabilities to get to the United States yet.
Yeah, but aren't there sort of enough people around to intervene?
No, that's what's scary about it. And also, a lot of people are, you know,
I hope
one of the only ways that right now, if Obama is if Trump is obsessed with his numbers and his ratings, his ratings.
I know.
Honestly,
I know.
No wartime president has, you know, that's a surefire way to get his ratings up.
Sure.
People are worried about him going to war.
Oh, I am.
Just to sort of get out of his rut.
I get that.
Oh, my God. You think about all the, like, you know, tragedies that Obama had to deal with in terms of shootings and, you know, terrorism incidents like San Bernardino. I mean, the first time Trump has, God forbid, one of these instances, it's going to be
already did and he didn't do anything.
You mean in
Kentucky or Kansas, whoever it was.
Yeah.
No, we talked about this on the show last week. We didn't talk about Trump's address, which maybe we should very briefly talk about. But I was complaining last week that Trump had not mentioned the fact that the two Indian guys who were killed, and I can't remember, I think it was Kansas. He did very briefly on prompter mention it, but. I don't mean a shooting incident where a brown person is killed. I mean the first time there's a shooting incident where a white person is killed.
Thank you for clarifying. That's all we care about.
Because the ones when the brown people die, Trump doesn't talk about. I'm talking about the ones that he wants to exploit. It's scary.
Well, we should wrap this up. But before we go, his address was amazing and perfect, and that was when he became president.
That was the moment he became president. His address
last week.
I hope that every fucking pundit who talked about how goddamn presidential he was in the State of the Union that he read off the teleprompter
was also awake at 6:30 in the morning when he was like sitting on the toilet tweeting.
Did you guys see the Daily Show coverage of it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought that was the best. Because they're like,
friend of the pod, Zubin Parang, congrats. You did a great job. Head writer to the Daily Show.
But They took a clip of him saying, "I know how to be presidential."
Yes.
That was great. Showed him saying that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this is an.
I'll just walk out like this, and I'll do my shoulders like this.
I'm presidential.
You know, he does have acting experience, and it's good to know that he can act.
Well, someone with a theater degree, his range is very limited.
I didn't say training; I said experience.
Steve, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great conversation, and tune in next week, everybody. We're going to talk to Steve more personally about his work. We've already had the conversation. I can vouch for it being very good. We get into a very long discussion about the DeVos family in Michigan, mm-hmm. and Steve has personal experience interacting with the DeVos family, made famous more recently by Betsy DeVos.
Yeah.
So it's a great conversation. So listen to next week's episode. Subscribe to the podcast. Steve, they should check out what's the URL for the Center for Creative Activism or Artistic Activism?
It's artisticactivism.org.
Artisticactivism.org. Check it out. Steve is making activism everywhere funnier and more effective. So he's fighting a good fight. Check that out. And remember to vote in midterm elections, everybody.
Do it. Good night. Good night.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.